this is your host, Scott Smith, and I'm here again with Dr. Paul Cates, PhD, and we are discussing and continuing our discussion of the topic, the seven most common homeschooling mistakes parents make that rob their child of academic and life potential. And of course, in our last call, we discussed mistake number one, which is attempting to do traditional school at home when deciding to homeschool without any modifications. Dr. Cates went into great detail there. Mistake number two, failing to discover the optimum length of your child's attention span. And we discussed mistake number three, ignoring the importance of schedule and routine. Just because you're schooling at home doesn't mean that routine and schedule goes out the window. So we discussed that as well. And once again, we are on the call with Dr. Paul Cates. Dr. Paul Cates has been involved in ministry in the educational field for over 50 years. He does ongoing research in the field of ADD and ADHD, which are, of course, our attention deficit disorders, and how they impact the learning of the child. And also, Dr. Cates has made big strides in combating those two disorders with educational approaches over and against medical approaches. However, of course, he works in conjunction with medicine and has a growing understanding of how medicines actually affect the learning capabilities and deficiencies of children. And so he also, of course, works with gifted children in helping them to realize their potential, and has helped many, many break into Ivy League schools and receive scholarships and all sorts of things simply because of their proficiencies that they developed and the ability of learning their potential that they reached in terms of learning in the homeschool years as a result of consulting with those parents and designing customized curriculum, which you'll hear more about as we go further. Dr. Cates, it is so good to have you again on the call. How are you today?
Very good. Thank you, and it's good to be back with you.
Well, we want to pick up our interesting discussion. We have four more mistakes that we want to cover that many homeschooling parents make commonly, robbing their children of academic and life potential. What would be mistake number four?
Mistake number four would be failing to discover the child's unique learning style. What we mean by that, we're not really concerned, again, with putting a label on a child, whether he has learned left brain or right brain. Left brain usually signifying a stronger capability in the auditory channel, and right brain usually signifying a stronger ability in the visual or the visual processing or the visual motor abilities. Let's say here, first of all, if there is a difference, we'd like to know a little bit about what that difference is, okay? Because that difference can affect how long a child can hold his or her attention. It can affect how much they can process in a particular academic field. It has a lot of ramifications. Now, a thing that's very important to understand here, there's a lot of different approaches and therapies and methods to go about handling this particular myth. One is that you just teach to the strength and you kind of ignore the disability. And the other is that you ignore the strength and then work on the weakness and you concentrate on that. My philosophy has been over the years opposed to both of those particular extremes. I believe we should not ignore the gift or the talents or the abilities that God has given to any and each of us. But we should continue to develop that. But also, we should not ignore the area that the child or the adult would be having difficulty in. And there we have to set up a program. What can we do to help that deficiency? And so the programs that we put together for parents and for the child is to be a combination of those two things and to help both of them simultaneously develop. Now, they won't necessarily be developing at the same rate or in the same way, but it is important to develop both of those. One of the areas that's extremely important to have good development in both the left and the right hemisphere, of course, is reading, because reading involves both the auditory and the visual channel. And so if one of those are deficient, we've got to take a very quick look very early to determine which it is and then what can be done to help that disability. Because if you're ever in the long run going to become a proficient and a good reader, you've got to be able to not only have development in both of those modalities, but you have to be able to integrate that development. So understanding how the child learns is extremely important. Also, that affects what we talked about in one of the earlier myths, okay? Sometimes a child can learn for a longer period of time auditorily than they can visually, or learn a longer period of time visually than they can auditorily, or sometimes kinesthetically and tactilely longer than they can with either auditory or visual. And that's important to assess and then to develop it to its fullest potential. Mm-hmm. So taking an overall look at all of this is extremely important.
Do you see a lot of tendency out there to try to adapt the child's learning style to a particular curriculum? Is that a common fallacy?
I think what would be a better way to put it is we try to mold circles into square holes. What we do is, number one, a lot of people do is they find a curriculum. This is the strength of the curriculum. And since it worked for one child, they want it to work for all their children. And so
yeah,
they try to make that child conform to that piece of curriculum. And that necessarily is not going to create success. In fact, it might be the beginning step of leading to a disaster. That's not going to work. A second problem is sometimes our children take after the opposite mate that is not teaching. Some of us are stronger auditorily or visually than we are the other modality, and so we want to teach to our strength, and the child happens to have the characteristics of the opposite parent, and so we'd like to ignore that. In fact, it is annoying that they have this strength and not the strength we have. In fact, if we are a strong visual learner and we want to give the assignments to the children, have them work independently, and we want to have instruction at a bare minimum, and after we've just started for a minute or two, he's or she is already interrupting with questions. Sometimes they're not even on the subject or pertinent to the subject, and therein is where the combative nature starts. And so we have to become familiar to our own learning style as well as the learning style of the child.
Interesting. So it's almost like the parent would be almost like the eye doctor who is trying to prescribe to the patient their own prescription for glasses simply because they can see with that prescription. We assume that the patient will be able to see just as well. That would be a huge mistake. But it seems that in resolving the understanding and going in, getting a good assessment of the child's learning style, that one of the trickle-down effects is a resolve of much of the conflict that's going on that a lot of parents are experiencing in that homeschool situation. Am I correct?
Yes.
Interesting. Well, that sort of leads us to our next mistake here, mistake number five. What would be mistake number five that so many homeschool parents tend to make?
Misreading or misreacting to symptoms of learning challenges. I think a simple way to start, and this is a generalization, so it doesn't necessarily apply to everybody, but usually when there is a learning problem, learning shuts down. That causes frustration probably on anyone who's going to teach that child to begin with. But there's another secondary problem that can become primary, and that probably is an area we need to talk about and address for just a moment. When a child or an adult cannot do what he or she is asked to do, there's not only inattention and distractibility and lack of focus, but also a behavior issue start to appear. Now, one of the biggest challenges is to take a look at why those behavior problems are occurring. Many people want to get counseling for the behavior problem right off the bat. They want to address the behavior problem and then think if we address the behavior problem, that's going to take care of the academic and cognitive problems, where in fact the reverse is usually true. The behavior problems, the frustration, the inattention, the distractibility, many times is due to inappropriate materials being presented to the child, or the materials being presented to the child are being presented in a not correct way. And so you have a real conflict going on here. You have a real breakdown going on here. You have a child that is not learning here. And so what happens is this whole thing snowballs. And the further we get behind, the more frustrated people on both sides get. And somebody has to come and say, hey, stop a moment. We're just spinning our wheels. Number one, we've got to go to someone that can help us assess what's going on here. I'm not concerned of putting a label on any child, but I am concerned of knowing where he or she is. It's like saying, you know, I might be running a service facility for cars, but my main objective isn't to put all brand new parts on a brand new car. But my reason for having that service department is if something that is working and I know is a good machine breaks down, I want to discover what is causing the breakdown and what can I do to fix it. Well, if we can kind of do an analogy with our child or the family and realize what's causing the breakdown, this is going to help us take care of the problem quicker. Many times the assumption is we just have a, quote, bad child, or the child is staying up at night just trying to sabotage our sacrifice in homeschooling, or all sorts of misconclusions, or I'm not fit to really teach this child. That's not true. And we bought into that particular premise or that philosophy, then we'd say God made a mistake in giving you this child, and God doesn't make mistakes. This is a very important thing. If we have a challenge, if we could just stop for a minute, and if we do nothing else in the assessment, say, the challenge means we've got a problem. Now, number two is not to draw attention to the problem or make the problem worse than it is. Number two is what can we do to fix the problem? And you've got to go to somebody that's going to give you a solution. I've often said, and I've been married over 50 years, Scott, that you know, many times people come to each other and all we do is complain. And I know that seems to be fashionable today. Well, just hear me, you know, I just want to talk about it. But the problem is we don't want a solution. My philosophy has been all the years, don't give me the problem unless you've got some way that we can figure our way to solve that issue or that problem. And I think if we could approach our children with that philosophy, okay, I've got a problem here, but we've got to understand, number one, it's not insurmountable. God says my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And that doesn't apply to everything but the training up of our children. Mm-hmm. So we've got to realize something is creating this issue. What is it? Now, what are the steps we can take to change it? And if we can understand that, then I think we can say these truly are learning challenges, and we can look at them positively versus negatively.
Absolutely. And assessing those challenges correctly is so important, and I can tell this from personal experience. I know when we were having issues in homeschool and, you know, we began to just research and investigate as to what the problems might be, the grand conclusion, it seemed, was that our daughter has attention deficit disorder because so many of the symptoms were there. But I remember that after we tested with you, you were the first one to say, no, there's something neurological that's going on here that's not right. There's there's something happened. It's not a psychological issue. It's a neurological issue. The brain is not functioning correctly, and it I don't think it's ADD. And we were sitting there really shocked, and to be honest, I was thinking, I'm not sure if Dr. Cates is right on this one. I know he's right often, but he may not be right on this one, because so much of what she deals with is looks and sounds and smells like ADD, but yet it was quirky. It was odd. There were some things that didn't seem right. Sure enough, after we followed your suggestions and got her examined and looked at, she had epilepsy, and she had a form of epilepsy that had nothing to do with grand mal seizures, which is the first thing that we think of when we think about an epileptic. And she was having partial complex seizures, and we didn't even know it. It was affecting her memory. It was giving her Swiss cheese understanding in terms of what she heard. There were gaps in her attention span, and it wasn't ADD. And it was everything that you're saying right now. We were misreading those symptoms of her learning challenges, thinking it was one thing, but it wasn't. And if we had built this entire approach in dealing with ADD, which was not her problem, we would still be frustrated here years later, having very little progress. But because we came to you and you were able to give us the feedback and the direction that we needed, we found what was really going on, which allowed us, of course, under your leadership, create workable solutions that have made a difference. And so so it's very, very important what you're saying. We need to read those symptoms correctly, and many times we think our conclusion is correct when in actuality it may be an error. And of course, you don't necessarily trust your own instincts. Am I correct? Don't you use tools and evaluation instruments that are scientific in nature?
Yes, this isn't one of those kind of shoot from the hip thing and hope we bring something down, you know. It's done with, you know, a diagnosis and a diagnostic type of educational evaluation that says, yes, this does make sense and fits into the puzzle. No, this does not, you know. No, there's more issues than you're presenting as apparent to me on the surface. Children that we see are what we call comorbid in nature. In other words, you've possibly gone to one or two specialists and they said they have this problem, and it's true, they do have that problem. But there are more problems contributing to the overall way your child's learning than this one or two problems that have been discussed or discovered so far. And that, for many parents, is very shocking. They figure, well, we'll take care of this one issue and then the whole thing will clear up and be totally solved. Now, that's unfortunate that is the background of the training of a lot of professionals, and that's how they approach, the issue. But most of us individuals are much more complex than just having one symptom that has made up all the characteristics of how we are or not learning cognitively and academically.
Well, and then that sort of leads us to mistake number six. What is mistake number six of the seven most common homeschooling parental mistakes that you'd like to share with us today?
Mistake number six is low-level resources that fail to fit your child's style and proficiency. What I mean by that is that many folks just resort to finding someone that'll say, hey, we've got the curriculum that's going to meet all the needs of your child, whether he has or she has any problems or they have no special needs, or whether they're gifted or they're not gifted. Well, after 51 years in the field, I can tell you there is no one curriculum that can give you a total well-rounded education, both cognitively and academically. Especially for those that are at the gifted end extreme and those that have special needs. Curriculum goes two ways. It develops vertically and it develops horizontally. Some children with special needs need extra reinforcement. They need material presented at the same level, but maybe auditorily one day, visually another day, kinesthetically or tactilely another day. Some of them need to continue on but have memory problems or processing issues, so the volume of material has to be tailor-made, and also the amount of repetition has to be altered. So there are many alterations, so that just using a standard resource mode or set of materials is not going to really meet the needs without frustration for your child if you're going to do a total individualized program.
And you say low-level resources, which obviously a lot of parents are very budget-conscious, but I've heard you make the point before, the area of our children's education is not necessarily the place we need to be trying to save the most money because it's such an important area. And I'm assuming that oftentimes being too budget-conscious in terms of getting curriculum can also get us into trouble?
Well, I guess everyone has their priorities, and I think that some of us as parents, we need to sit back and say, you know, of the resource that God has given us, what is our priority? Now, of course, you know, serving Him is extremely important, and of course, giving to His causes and His work, but I don't think that should ever be at the neglect of the very children that God gave to us. The one thing that we have that we're leaving here when we leave this earth are our children and the heritage that we give to them. So I think if there's going to be cutting corners, it might be on the type of house we have. It might be on the number of times we go out to eat. It might be on the new car that we have. But when it comes to cutting resources, when our children have needs that are special, I think therein sometimes we need to examine our hearts and take a second look. Now, I'm not saying that some of us aren't on tight budgets. I've been a pastor most of my life, and I know what a tight budget is, and I've had six children, have 12 grandchildren. So you're not talking to somebody that has no earthly idea of, you know, what a tight budget is. But I'm saying, again, we all have things that we can shift around. It might take time. We might need help at looking for the resources. We might not be able to get everything we need at the moment that we want it. But I think with time and with God's help and knowing that God is on the throne, He will provide a means for us to be able to educate our children properly.
Yes, and this is an investment in not only the generation of our children, but in future generations and in our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren. The investment right. We make in these early years and important years of education. Well, that leads us also to the final mistake that many homeschool parents make very commonly in inadvertently robbing their children of academic and life potential. What is mistake number seven?
Well, mistake number seven is using standardized group written tests to assess their child's ability or disabilities. A group test does not really... First of all, it cheats the child that cannot get things down on paper and pencil. Does not give a true score to the child that, after working a short period of time, sometimes less than 5 minutes, just puts down any answer that comes to mind. It doesn't give a true assessment that this child can do this type of test. It's more the power level type testing. Also, those scores are really frustration scores. They're not scores where the child can work independently or the child can even work with instructions. And so those are not broken down for the parents. And so they have a false illusion that their child is at such and such a level. And that might not necessarily be so. Also, what a child can do in a very short period of time does not assess what they can do in the classroom or in a period that requires them to be there and concentrate on that subject for 20, 30, 40 minutes. So all those individual variables need to be taken into account, and they're very important. If you don't, you're going to have a misunderstanding of really both the potential and the needs that your child has.
So in your organization, are you not using standardized testing?
Yes, we're using standard, but they're standardized diagnostic individual tests. So our assessments are done on a one-to-one basis, and we're not doing it to label the child. that's not our calling or our forte. Ours is to assess where the child is so we can set up an individual plan for that child to start where they can work comfortably and then from there to move on to be successful. And we really believe that success should be built upon success. And we don't know where God is going to take that particular individual. We see individuals go to college that other professionals have said there's no way this person will ever get through high school, let alone get through college, and they've gone on and done quite well. We have one young gentleman that I started with many, many years ago, over 50 years ago, in fact. He is now retiring from the Chicago school system as a principal, and yet he was told that he'd never learn to read and he never would go anywhere, and yet he was in my graduate program and went on to be a very superior leader and principal in the Chicago public school system. So, you know, these things are all up to God, but God expects us to use wisdom, and who we seek out is resources to help us, and God makes no mistake in who he puts us with or next to help us in our training. What we need to understand, we're not out there alone. God has the body and the fellowship of believers, and God puts us together at the right time to achieve the right thing for his glory.
Absolutely. And that is such a word of encouragement and a word of hope. You know, one of the things that I think about is the fact that so many of us who are homeschooling have chosen to do so for a number of reasons, but one of those reasons is the fact that we could give focused one-on-one attention to our child, and that our children would have the opportunity to have one-on-one tutelage and instead of one-on-many. And you have come along with all the resources and the expertise that you have, and you're essentially offering the one-on-one component, the one-on-one value across the entire spectrum. One-on-one in terms of individualized testing, individualized assessment, individualized curriculum building around all of the uniquenesses that God has built into any particular child. And I think that is tremendous, and that is something that's virtually unheard of in many cases, and honestly something that a lot of parents have never really thought about, taking it to that degree. But I think the example that you just gave is such a good one, in the sense that it really gives a picture of how where the world in their traditional boxes of, or society, even the government, schools, whatever, in their traditional boxes of how education ought to be administered, would often look at a child and say, there's no use, they're beyond hope, there's nothing we can do for this child. And with their limited perspectives and paradigms and their limited resources, that's probably true. But it seems that once we look at it from this perspective, we begin to see that no child should be tossed aside as hopeless. Many of these barriers can be broken down if it's understood what's really going on underneath, what's really going on in the mind and the physiology and the heart of the child, and being able to build the curriculum almost like taking tools out of a toolbox that are unique and specialized to help that child learn and help that child reach their potential. I mean, this is really, really a big, big philosophy of education that I hope parents get their minds around. And you're not just interested in the academic performance of the child. You have a lot of interest in terms of the vision for families and parents and generational vision. Am I saying that correctly?
Yes. I would say that the thing to put in a nutshell, Scott, is that, you know, each of us have individual talents. And what God holds us responsible for is to provide our children with the opportunity to develop those talents so they can be used for God's glory. You know, many people say they have an individualized program, but that's really not true. We review each year hundreds of pieces of new curriculum and then choose hundreds of pieces of new curriculum. And we could have 25 children all on 25 different types of programs. it's the uniqueness, I think, that God has given us in this ministry to be able to match together the child's different strengths and weaknesses with the unique materials that are out there that are going to meet his or her needs. There's a lot of wonderful material, and all we need to do is put those in touch with the parents that we work with, and to God be the glory.
Yes, absolutely. We appreciate your contribution to the homeschool movement, to parents who want to educate their children and do it with vision and passion and hope. And let me ask you, what would be the next step if someone's listening to this and they want to get their child assessed? They want to learn the unique learning style of their child. They want to know what is the perfect and most appropriate curriculum for their child at their age and at their learning level. What would they need? What would be their next step? How would they get in touch with you?
Probably to call one of our numbers at one of our offices. One number would be 828-435-0670. Another number could be 865-685-0658.
All right, fantastic. And of course, we know that we can also find you at your website, paulcates.org. It's probably the easiest website to remember, paulcates, C-A-T-E-S .org. And there's also a contact form at that website that will send an email to the address that Dr. Cates just gave us. And also there's information there on their testing and what tests are administered and how you can get involved in that. Dr. Cates, you also offer seminars periodically on a variety of subjects. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, at certain times of the year, we offer three-day seminars where parents come in very small groups, usually no more than six sets of parents at a time, and they're here with us intensely for 3 days. And there we work with you, and in some of the seminars work with your child also. And we demonstrate and show you how to use the curriculum correctly with your child, how to adapt that curriculum to meet the special needs of your child, et cetera. And these have been met with tremendous positive results. And we've been very happy. And we offer numerous of seminars like this during the year. Again, they need to just call the office, inquire about when they are, and they can be put on the list. And then when a space becomes available, we can let them know.
Absolutely. So do please call Dr. Cates at those numbers that he gave us today, or drop by the website. And of course, there's a calendar at the website also that will be listing events, testing dates, as well as seminar dates. So we want to encourage you also to go by paulcates.org and avail yourself of those numbers and that contact information, as well as the seminar and testing schedule. Or, of course, you can do as Dr. Cates has suggested, just call their office. Someone will get back to you as quickly as they can or may answer the phone and give you the information that you need. But don't delay. Don't waste any time. If you've been considering taking the next step in homeschooling with your child, you do not want to delay in finding the right curriculum that is designed to help your child reach their potential. And the only way you can know that is to have the right assessments administered. And Dr. Cates is among the best in the world at knowing how to do that in a way that gives you the most information and ultimately yields the highest result that you want to accomplish in your homeschool environment. Dr. Cates, we appreciate so much your time, and we trust that this call has been very beneficial as we've discussed the seven most common homeschooling mistakes that parents make that rob their child of academic and life potential. And hopefully we have what we need now to avoid those seven mistakes and begin to make progress away from mistakes and towards successes. So thank you so much for your insight and your time.
Thank you.